Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by David Walker of the Daily Mirror and Adrian Clark of the PremierLeague.com. Well, that escalated quickly. Liverpool began the month on top of the world. Now they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. A fourth home defeat in 10 days when Chelsea visit on Tuesday will equal their worst run in 94 years. Season on the line, David?
I think it is, Mike, and I think it's a colossal change of fortune for them. And I know people up in the northwest. There were even Manchester United fans a few weeks ago accepting that Jurgen Klopp had been a brilliant appointment for Liverpool. The popularity he gained both as a man and for the way his team played football. He was a hero. And yet, it is a results-driven business. I've got to say, I think he brought some of this on himself with the approach they had to the FA Cup and quite why Liverpool took a home tie against the Championship team as an opportunity to field so many young and untried players. I think that was crazy of him personally. He could have started with more established players, then hooked them at an hour, 70 minutes with a game won and saved them. But anyway, Chelsea, he's got to get out there and get a result. And I've got a feeling that it is made for a Chelsea mugging up there, that they got great Italian coach. They let Liverpool have all the passion and drama and the cop will be banging the team forward, and that it's tailor-made for a Conte team then.
Is Klopp basically getting a crash course in English football? The intensity of it, the relentlessness of it? You know, you're a hero one day, you're zero the next.
Quite possibly. I think he's overestimated the quality of his squad. I think that's a big mistake on his part. I don't think the backups at Anfield are sufficient enough. The quality isn't there to be able to rest 9-10 players the way that maybe Arsenal can, the way that Manchester United can, and get away with it. He's a world-class manager, Jurgen Klopp. I think it's nonsense to say that he should be booted out of Anfield, but he needs to take a long, hard look at himself for two reasons. The recruitment. The recruitment in the summer was bang average, in my opinion. He needed more defensive players. He didn't sign any players, apart from Joel Matip, who's been pretty successful. Aside from that, he didn't bring enough quality in who are good without the ball. That's part one. Part two is that tactically, where is the plan B? It's one way or no, it's one way, and that's it. What they need is a target man. Against a team like Wolves, he was sitting deep. You need to mix things up. Sometimes you need to get the ball in the box, and Liverpool got no one to aim for.
David makes a point, quite rightly, that they've been undone by counter-attacking teams. Which is the best counter-attacking team in the Premier League? Chelsea.
Yeah, it's a very difficult game for them. Look, if you were to preview this game on current form, which I guess we have to, then you say it's a Chelsea win. Easy. It's not a problem, but I just think football's got a funny habit of throwing in surprise results. And Liverpool do have talent. Going forward, they can score goals against anybody, and that is including Chelsea. So I think this is a really interesting game.
I think, Mike, there's another key issue around it. You know, we'll never see the medical stats on what's happened at Liverpool because they would never release them. But that high-pressing style that he brought in, and they did brilliantly, and it worked for them up to a point, they appear, to a layman's eye, to have hit a wall. They are not successful in doing that now, and teams are able to counter-attack. We saw the same thing last April with Tottenham, who played a similar high-pressing to a point. And it has been noted, Arno, in football, you know, among backroom staff members, how often the teams that think they could do that in English football for a season at some point hit the wall and need almost the breather and then could go again. Now, of course, with no winter shutdown, which Klopp's used to in the Bundesliga...
And not, not enough quality in reserve. It's all well and good. Yeah, if you're going to have burnout, it's fine, but if you've got the players to come in that can make a difference.
Aren't we making excuses for players, you know, highly paid players... You take the example of Roger Federer, 35 years old, he won five-hour matches on the way to winning the Australian Open at the weekend. We're moaning that a highly paid, highly tuned footballer can't do two games in 72 hours.
Managers are moaning, or they're suggesting that. I don't buy it. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. I mean, players in the olden days, so we say, going back 20, 30, 40 years, would play just as many games. They wouldn't get injured. They'd play on pitches that were very heavy. The pitches are perfect these days. I think it's nonsense. My view on it is quite simple. It's that there are so many squad players now. The squads are so much bigger, and these guys are being paid hundreds of thousands, millions of pounds a year, and there is an obligation to give these players a game. And I think it's as much about that as it is about resting the number one team. I think the resting part, the rotation, is almost used as an excuse.
The one good thing that happened to Liverpool all the weekend was actually a bad thing.
Go on.
Sadio Mane missing the penalty. They go out of the African Cup of Nations. Yes. He's on a private plane, probably on the bench at least against Chelsea.
And clearly I sense Liverpool have, A, missed his pace, the tempo he brings, and the pressing he brings up front for them. The converse side of this is, the managers who are saying we're expecting too much from the players and the demands are too great, so suddenly you're putting pressure on a boy who's been away playing in Africa in a competitive tournament. He's got straight on a plane after the downer of missing the pen, and now he's going to be Liverpool's saviour. I mean, it's a crazy circle of just saying, oh, Sadio Mane's back, so all is well. You know, if anybody needs a break, you'd think it'd be him. And, you know, I do think the travelling part of it, for that sort of thing, that the global travel does take a lot out of players.
What about the nature of the club? You know, Liverpool is an emotionally driven club. That can work for them. You know, we saw that against Dortmund, didn't we, in the Champions League. But can it work against them?
It can work against them, although I do think that the crowd are quite supportive compared to many other clubs. I do think that they stick with the players, they stick with the manager. I know there are some numpties that, you know, on the radio that are calling for Jurgen Klopp to go. And you
That's
will,
a nonsense.
You will always get that. Totally. You will always get that. But I think in the main, Liverpool fans are quite fair. And I don't think they'll get... I think they'll get right behind their team against Chelsea. They'll look at this and think, we can help the team here. And I think that's where Liverpool have an advantage over some clubs. The atmosphere at Anfield can be dead sometimes. But for big games, it is usually, you know, rocking there. And I believe that they will be the 12th man, or try to be.
Let's look at it from Chelsea's point of view. This could be the week they wrap up the title. Liverpool, Tuesday, Arsenal, Saturday, lunchtime.
I don't think they'll wrap it up, Mike, literally, in the sense of, but the statement it makes and the gap they've got now, the rest, the chase impact are desperate. I mean, it's a fact, and I saw Steven Gerrard was interviewed at the weekend where he said Liverpool, A, have to beat Chelsea to keep their own title hopes alive, and B, will have the hopes of everybody else with them this week saying, please do it, because we've got to try and hold Chelsea back into the pack. Yeah. Now, looking at some previous years where there have been turnarounds, two or three defeats coming quickly, and for instance, Chelsea lose two this week, it will give everybody heart and sow the seed of doubt.
Mentally, it could be an issue because it's two huge games, and that ties you out as much as it can physically, I think.
Yeah. But I say this, David Luiz apart, who I will always think has got a rick in him and something could go wrong, I just think Antonio Conte set that team up. You know, he's a brilliant coach. He can clearly put out functional teams as he did at times with Italy. And you just look at it and think, you know what? He could take the draw on Tuesday night without a problem. Yeah, that'll suit them. Chelsea don't have to go and chase anything. And as I say, I've got this little view. You could just see him saying, OK, come on, let the bugles blow her off the cop. Let them all go chasing forward. And Chelsea are a great counter-attacking team. And I also think, got to say, in terms of Conte and his owner, I think Abramovich's way of dealing with the Diego Costa, let me get out to China in this thing, and the way that the word just came out, no, you're going nowhere, tell George Mendes he's going nowhere, just kill her, we will not sell him. It was basically, he'll rot here, he's not going. They did it early, quick, and we're efficient, and now you get on, we're winning the league.
And Costa is sort of Chelsea in microcosm, because he's streetwise, you know, there's a bit of an edge to him.
Not half.
But he's a big game player.
Costa is a big game player. He's an animal, isn't he, in the attack? I just think he is one of the best centre-forwards on the planet. When he's on it, he is so, so hard to contain. But Liverpool contained him fine in the first match at Stamford Bridge.
Only team to win at Stamford Bridge.
Arsenal nullified him completely at Emirates Stadium. Such controlled aggression from Mustafi and Koscielny that particular day. They squeezed up. They bumped into Diego Costa every time the ball went up to him. They've got to be brave enough to do that again at Stamford Bridge. If they do.
That's the key. Yeah. The teams that have done well against him, particularly the centre-backs, you stand your ground, but you keep your hands down. You don't start
controlling.
He'll make
aggression.
It and he want to put his head into your face. You don't do that. You know you've got it, but you don't let him think he can bully you, because if he does, he'll be all over the place.
How do you think Arsenal will approach this on Saturday against Chelsea?
I would like Arsenal to rip up the attacking formula that they've been using in the league, actually, for this game. I think they need to ditch Plan B, which has worked fabulously over the Christmas period and January with Olivier Giroud leading the line and leading it expertly. He's done his job, he's scored goals, he's delivered. But I think now is the time for Plan A to come back, and that means Alexis up front, a fluid, all-pace attack with him flanked potentially by Danny Welbeck one side, Theo Walcott the other. I think if you ask Chelsea who they prefer to mark, those three centre-halves at the weekend, I think they would say Olivier Giroud. Mm. I would go with the formula they used at Southampton in the Cup, with a really mobile attack, because those three centre-backs have got to be dragged around. Drag them around, holes will appear in the middle.
And that was a great, I say, result. It was the scoreline was great, but within the game, the Danny Welbeck form and the thing at the weekend, because as Wenger's shown in the past, he will let him play wide left where he can attack from, but also against Chelsea, it helps block off their wing-backs as well, which is a big, big danger as they're coming at you, that they're going to release people. And I've got to say, I can see Danny Welbeck being a key man, being operating wide on the left.
And the numbers don't lie. Arsenal have scored 81 goals so far this season. That's only 10 fewer than the whole of last season, and in 21 games fewer.
Great stat, wasn't it, that?
Yeah. Wonderful. Mm. Now, that tells me that they've always got a chance in any game, whatever the occasion.
Of course, yeah. Arsenal score goals. They've scored more than four goals away from home several times, multiple times this season. They're great going forward. I think this match, from their perspective, is all about how they nullify Chelsea, which is something that Arsene Wenger doesn't often concentrate on. He is all about, what are we going to do with the ball? How are we going to hurt the opposition? I do think when you play Chelsea at the moment, especially at Stamford Bridge, you have to come up with a plan. And the plan worked at Emirates Stadium. I know they've changed their system since Chelsea. They've gone to this three at the back. It doesn't matter, in my view. In terms of shackling Costa, Hazard and co, Willian, you've got to shrink that space. It means pressing from the front, Alexis up top, working hard, and everyone squeeze up to the halfway line. You don't leave any room for Costa, Hazard, Willian, Pedro, those guys to do the damage. That, I think, is the tactical blueprint, and Arsenal will get chances. And providing they're clinical, they can score one, two or three at Stamford Bridge, no problem.
Mm. Arsene Wenger won't be on the touchline. Four-match ban. That, to me, the punishment doesn't fit the crime. The only inconvenience he suffered at Southampton was probably, you know, the cucumber sandwiches weren't quite up to scratch in the boardroom.
No.
Should he have been made an example of?
Yes, but he couldn't be, because it's a bit like any of us appearing in a magistrate's court where the tariffs are laid down and the panel looking at what we're going to punish him with have to follow those tariffs. Do the tariffs work now, or should the FA, with the Premier League's backing, be reviewing their punishments? Yeah. Now, I remember when I was working in football, there was a famous chairman of a club called Peter Hurd, who was the chairman of Colchester, and he was known as the hanging judge because he would chair the disciplinary panel, and you could go in with any appeal you wanted, but you knew the referee was right and it would be case dismissed. Yeah. And then one day we went in on the same day with an Alan Smith appeal and a Mark Viduka against
this is when you're at Leeds.
At Leeds, against red cards. And we thought, if this is the hanging judge, we haven't got a prayer. And we walked in, and the chairman of the panel was Peter Coates from Stoke. So that was the first result, and believe it or not, and I think it was the first time it had ever happened, a club got two red cards rescinded in the same day by the FA. But going back to your Wenger thing, those tariffs are laid down. The tariffs are not suitable. It's not right now. We've got to look at it, and pushing a fourth official or any official should merit a much tougher sanction.
Touchline bans should be eradicated. It's as simple as that. I actually think touchline bans are an advantage for a manager, especially when you can communicate with the bench below. You've got a great view. Arsene Wenger had an outstanding view at Southampton of the match, and he could pass on whatever he liked. I think touchline bans should be binned, and we should bring in stadium bans. Every time a manager gets sent off, I don't care whether it's Wenger or anybody else, one game stadium ban. That is a true punishment. I think if you're dealing with touchline bans, four games is about right.
But you don't think that if you actually start pushing officials and laying hands on them, that merits more than just...
Especially at a time when the FA are relaunching the respect campaign.
I think four games with touchline bans in existence, I think four games was about right. Two is too low. 10, 12 was ridiculous. I thought the media overhyped that, in my opinion. I think four is about right. But a true punishment would be a stadium ban of at least one game. But I just think it should be across the board. Manager gets sent off, one game stadium ban.
The one I'd do, I think you're right about the touchline bans immaterial. They should be banned from the stadium, so they're actually out of it for the day. The one I would do now, the tariff should be tied to their wages. This thing about him getting fined 25,000...
That's 10p to you,
absolutely. You know. So they should be looking at, if it's a week's wages and that's £250,000, it should be fine that. You'd stop it quickly then and make it that the manager has to pay the fine.
Mm. A lot simpler. Mm. Arsenal playing Watford first. Now, I looked at that game against Millwall and I saw a club without an identity, a team without any real belief or hope. Mm. And also, did they actually care? Now, that to me is a team that's going to struggle to avoid getting relegated.
Well, if we were looking at teams that have hit a wall spectacularly after making very good starts, you know, relative to the standard they're at, I think the ultimate one we're seeing this year is Watford. They are in a mess, and this slide has started, and it is a case of how they get out of it. Mm. Now, I'm intrigued when Matt Zari's talking about, I have a three-year plan. There's not been a manager at Watford who's lasted that for however many. Forget it. You've got to get this sorted out. Now, they seem to be standing by him at the moment, but the pressures, and like last year, you looked at the strike force, you know, Edini and Ighalo getting all those goals. It saves you any problem because you know you've got goals in your team, and they were safe with it. The whole sort of blueprint of what they had and what the strengths were, it's just gone. It's weird. It's a very spectacular collapse. And my only thought for them is they may survive because of what happens with the bottom three.
Mm. But Ighalo, for instance, you know, classic one-season wonder, and they're talking about trying to ship him out to China. Yeah. Is that the problem? When you've got, I think it's 57 players that they've used over three seasons. You can't get any consistency or continuity with that.
Yeah, the turnover was bound to catch up on them eventually in terms of managerial turnover and playing personnel. That you mentioned the word team identity, and they've got away with that because they've had good individuals like Ighalo, hot streak. Deeney, I think, has been a real talisman for them. But you look at the team now, it's been chopped and changed so much. You couldn't name Watford's best 11. I don't think Matt Zari is anywhere close to knowing his best 11. Even maybe his best shape. He's had three at the back, four at the back. He's trying everything he possibly can. Yeah, I think they're on the slide. I would lump on Arsenal in this game. I think they're going to win quite handsomely, to be perfectly honest, based on what I've seen of Watford lately.
What about Manchester City, David? They're at West Ham, another BT game on Wednesday. Obviously, you know, memory fresh of them walking all over them in the FA Cup. Where are City now? Have they had their blip?
Do you know something, Mike? I think they're probably the most unpredictable team in the Premier League. In that you see them on a good day and you think, golly me, what a team this is looking like, and they can beat anybody. And I thought that was if you're a City fan, that was a heartening cup win for them at the weekend down at Palace. You know, on a horrible day, the weather was appalling. You looked at the team he had out. He had a lot of the, shall we say, lighter weight, skillful players there, and they came through that with flying colours and did really well. Most of all, and this has been the biggest weakness all season, it was nil against them, which was a rarity because of the issues with the goalkeeper and the defence in front of him, be it three
Company
or four.
Back, is that a
I was just going to say, and the next thing is, Vinny Company's back. Vinny's
well, looked how long's he back for?
Well, I was just going to say, my words were going to be, Vinny's looked as if he's made of glass for the last 2 years and there's an injury around the corner and he's in danger of, you know, shattering. That's your big worry. Don't. But clearly, if they can keep Company fit and they keep the nils, they can start going back up the table again.
Let's not let Guardiola pull the wool over our eyes with Company. It feels as if he's trying to paint the picture of, oh, now that we've got Company back, things will be much more solid. He has been available to him earlier on in the season. He chose not to use him. He was trying to build his team around other players. And ultimately, they haven't been coached well enough defensively. The organisation hasn't been good enough without the ball. So, look, Guardiola is a top manager, isn't he? You would like to think that behind the scenes he's working day and night, or certainly morning and afternoon, on his back four, on what they do without the ball. Because if City do improve that side of their game, they're a proper team.
I think, to be fair to him, Guardiola has been working on that. I think there's been a couple of games recently where you'd think, has anybody been listening to what he's been in? But he has been trying to get it right.
Because he spoke at Palace about that being a vision of the future, that performance. You know, Sane coming on, Gabriel Jesus, who looks a real player. What do you think City will look like this time next year?
Gosh, that's a really good question because of the number of players whose contracts are going to be out. And, I mean, I am assured that the funding will be there for him to go and buy, and I say whoever he wants, but if the market's there, you know, he can go and do what he wants. There'll be another £200 million to spend. I think the key issues you've got, he has to get in people like, oh, he's got to sort the goalkeeping situation out. He's got to sort out the centre-back thing. And he's got a personal view of needing dynamic, quick full-backs who can lead the line and lead the attacks and where you can switch play to them. He's not had that all season. So I think there's places you can see it. I think he'll get the money to do it. Yeah. The big problem is, I think he's had a chasing inexperience, especially with his goalie, Claudio Bravo, who fundamentally is not up to being a Premier League goalie. Yeah.
Two central midfielders, two full-backs, another centre-back and a keeper. He doesn't need to buy any more forward players. I hope, if I was a City fan, I would be hoping that Guardiola, whatever war chest he's given, I would hope that he spends it entirely on players from the central midfield backwards.
Are we going to... It looks like it's been quite a quiet window, all things considered. OK, West Ham have rid themselves of Payet, but let's not forget they've made a £15 million profit on that.
Yeah.
This has been quite a quiet window, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of clubs, a lot of the more successful teams are wary of buying it for the sake of it in January, and you're left with, well, who is actually available, and are any of them going to sell to each other? You know, you're selling to a rival if the quality's there. So I think that is a problem. So you do tend to find that the majority of work is clubs basically panicking. And part of that thing has been West Ham, who have had the rally in the last month, but looking at the January window. And Payet has forced the hand to a degree with some of the things. If you'd looked at it last season, Payet has been acclaimed as West Ham's greatest ever player and surpassing Bobby Moore and Tevez as this is the most wonderful thing and he's here for life. So that's how football can change.
Speaking of panic, we've got to mention Crystal Palace.
Okay.
Because if you look at, you know, their transfer policy, which seems to be, you know, back of a fag packet stuff at the moment, you've got Jeffrey Schlupp, who incidentally I'm told is injured already. You've got Patrick Van Aanholt coming in. Collectively, about 27 million. Jenkins and from Arsenal, perhaps.
Yeah.
That to me suggests that Sam Allardyce is not quite sure what he's going to do with this one.
No, they're in a bit of a pickle, aren't they? It's not happening for Big Sam at Palace. The players haven't responded to his words, to his methods yet. We keep thinking they will, but time is running out for them. I've got to say, I'm a bit dubious about the money they're spending on that type of player. I think Jeff Schlupp is a more than adequate Premier League player, but he's not a great defender. And I wouldn't say that he was a wonderful winger either. He's betwixt and between. And I would say that Patrick Van Aanholt is one of the worst left backs from a defensive point of view, positionally, that I've ever seen in the Premier League. So to spend over £10 million on him, I just can't believe it. So I'm wondering, is he going to use him on the left wing? Because he is good going forward. But I would question Palace's judgment there, because I'm telling you, a lot of the goals Sunderland have conceded over the last two seasons have been down to Patrick Van Aanholt's diabolical positioning.
And of course, Sam worked with him. You know what I mean? It's like sometimes you get a manager said, I know what this guy can do, and he'll block this up and he'll do the job.
Let's look at David Moyes. Now, OK, he's used Van Aanholt as his bargaining chip. You know, I'll take 10, 12 million from that, and that's the only money available to me. But he's basically getting the band together again, isn't he? You know, Lescott's gone in. Looks like Oviedo is going. Darren Gibson is going there. He's basically recreating Everton brick by brick, isn't he?
Tony Hibbert?
Only a matter of time. Him and Leon Osman, I suppose.
Yeah, I've got to say, Mike, I think more than creating the Blues Brothers tour, he's probably got his hands so firmly tied with Ellis Short's sort of attitude to spending any money that he's just going for some lads he knows who know.
He's jacked it in, hasn't he?
Yeah. But I think David Moyes is just... I mean, they are the last throw for him, aren't they, if they come off. As we know, there's one thing you can't do in sport, which is make a clock go backwards, despite what Roger Federer's achieved. You know, but generally, the chance of that happening, and he was a class act at his very peak. You look at some of those boys going in and the age they are now, it's a huge asset.
It'd be fascinating, wouldn't it, to see what happens. So I don't think West Ham have given up completely on Jermaine Defoe yet. I don't think they have. This is the reason I believe they haven't signed Scott Hogan yet. They're still holding out for Jermaine Defoe. And I see they've been linked with Leandro Ulloa, Sunderland. Now, if they were to sell Defoe at the last minute, bring in Ulloa, OK, Ulloa's a decent player,
but that's a Championship player.
It'd be grounds for resignation. To be perfectly honest, I think Moyes would almost... It'd almost be in his interest to just walk away before his reputation is damaged even more, because he's not going to get the support from Sunderland.
No, the suggestion is that Ellis Short will sell at £50 million for... Jermaine Defoe. Now, if they get the 15 million and he goes, is the claim. Now, again, given his age, etc., you can't believe that somebody would pay that. But as we've talked about...
I just paid 10 for Font, who's a veteran himself.
Where that would leave David Moyes, I hate to think.
It's extraordinary just to think that, you know, he was the anointed one at Manchester United. Now, Jose Mourinho is someone who buys teams to a large degree, gets the players in and makes them better by working with them. Will Manchester United, are they now in the mood to actually make a massive statement in the transfer market next summer? A Griezmann or even a Gareth Bale?
I think Griezmann will end up at Man United next summer. I do. And I think there'll be other interests. I think Arsenal will be in there, maybe even Manchester. I think Manchester United will get him. I think by then, if not in the Chinese window to the end of February, I think Wayne Rooney will be out the door, so they're saving £300,000 a week in wages. So I think with the Rooney thing resolved, with everybody happy...
Do you think Rooney will go to China?
I think Rooney will go to China, and I think it could happen because in the next month, because the Chinese window doesn't close till February 28th. So yeah, I think the money that is on offer to him, I think there is a view that he can't say no to that, and the suggestion that he could earn more in 3 years in China than in his entire Premier League career just makes it the sort of no-brainer bit for Wayne Rooney and also for Paul Stretford, his agent, who's trying to work out the next step forward.
You see, that would sadden me because, you know, that to me is almost selling the shirt, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't like the idea of it at all. I think deep down, Wayne Rooney wouldn't want to go to China, would he? I mean, I think if he was going to leave Old Trafford, maybe go to Everton. I always thought that he would go full circle and end up at Goodison Park. But no, he'd be writing off his England career.
Well, he is, but don't you think it could be written off? All I'm saying is, right, without telling you, this is what Wayne Rooney should do. Yeah. If you're looking at advising Wayne Rooney at the moment, as we sit here now, Wayne Rooney is the captain of Manchester United, the captain of England, and is the record goal scorer for Manchester United, and has that lovely picture with Sir Bobby handing over the trophy. Realistically, and every Manchester United fan knows it, Rooney is becoming a bit part player at Manchester United and will not be in the England squad long term. So if you had a moment to market him to get the next stage tied down for 3 years, because Wayne Rooney's pride will not want him being a squad player if he's even that at Manchester United. Mm. Now, I think the Everton thing with Koeman has gone anyway, because I don't think he'd take him.
No, maybe not. It's also in Manchester United's interest to sell Wayne Rooney to China. We haven't found out what they would be prepared to pay in a transfer fee. Judging by what these clubs have given Chelsea for their players, then Manchester United could almost fund the move for Griezmann with the wages they save and the fee that they get for Wayne Rooney. So from their point of view, I'm not surprised that United are saying, come on, Wayne, it's OK if you want to go.
And the other thing which ties in with this, the sort of logic of having an agreed course for the exit, do you remember when Cantona left and he retired and Alex Ferguson came afterwards and said the luckiest break he had as a manager was the day Eric knocked on the door, because they knew from his physical stats in games and what was happening and what they could see, he wasn't the power, but well, the fans weren't going to accept Eric, and Eric's track record was left out of the team for a bit. He started kicking off and it would have got messy. So actually, Eric deciding off his own bat to retire, and Alec used to go on about one of the key things you've got to deal with is when the hero decides he's not happy with something, how do you get him out the door? Now, Alec dealt with Brian Robson's sort of retirement and being a player manager at Middlesbrough, which he went off and did with his blessing. And I can see a way that Manchester United at some point in the next 6 months will find an exit route for Wayne Rooney with their blessing that he's happy with. And I think it works that way.
OK, let's finish by looking at a team at the other end of the cycle, Tottenham.
Yes.
You know, they play Middlesbrough in the BT Sport game on Saturday. Are they capable of avoiding what seems to have been happening to Liverpool?
I think they're capable of it, but they need to get lucky with the injuries. I think we saw, didn't we, in the FA Cup game, that their backups are maybe not, well, they're not at the same level. And there's a big gulf between their first 11 and what's underneath, and that is what will hamper their title bid, no doubt about that. Obviously, they've lost defenders, haven't they? Alderweireld's been out, Vertonghen has been out, so that's an issue. But now I think that Pochettino, I think he's an elite manager, and I think that his team are further down the line than Liverpool in terms of where they are structurally and with the tactics that he loves to employ. So I don't see it crashing around Spurs. I don't think it's all going to fall down for Spurs, put it that way. But injuries are the problem for them more than anything else.
And some strange stuff going on with Lamella, it seems to me. No one really knows what's going on there.
No, and that's what I was just going to say, Matt, that they did hit the wall last year. There were suggestions from inside the building that the players, they felt, or some of them felt, they were being overtrained at the end of the season. I think it was after the European campaign ended and they just fell away in the league, and so the whole thing...
But surely Pochettino would be able to recognise that and learn from it, surely?
You would hope so, but it's just, if that's what his background is and he's expecting that intensity and doing double sessions... And listen, we all know it. Players make excuses, so maybe that was the excuse the Tottenham players made last April, May time.
Well, it's the same factor with Liverpool, isn't it? They play that high intensity game, but they haven't got the depth to rest and rotate. So burnout is a real issue.
We look at Dele Alli. Logically, has to have a blip at some stage, but he's just burning the whole place down.
Well, he had his blip at the start of the season, didn't he? He wasn't brilliant up until sort of October, November time. Very quiet. He hadn't scored too many goals, but since then he's just been unbelievable, hasn't he? What a finisher! What a prospect! When I was his age, I was happy enough to play for the reserves. but he's playing in Tottenham's first team, and he's, you know, arguably their most talented player. So he's going to enjoy an unbelievable career, Dele Alli, and for Spurs' point of view, it's all about can they keep him in the long term, because I believe that the likes of Barcelona and Real Madrid will be monitoring him very closely, and he could be the next one off abroad like Gareth Bale.
Well, Spurs are vulnerable, but they believe, and that counts for a lot. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.